Chapter 1. The Exceptional Seven and the Traits That Defined Them. The seven CEOs featured in this book were selected on the basis of research that I conducted over a 4-year period. This research, which added up to several hundred hours of study and analysis, all told, included interviews with CEOs, interviews with experts such as Northwestern's marketing guru, Philip Kotler, who provided enlightening insights on my material, and a careful review of literally hundreds of books, articles, speeches, annual reports, websites, stock charts, and so on. While very specific criteria were employed to narrow down the list to the final seven, there was a subjective element to the selection process as well. As the editor and publisher of more than 250 business books, I have edited works that documented the lives and insights of such business leaders as William Paley, founder of CBS, Michael Eisner, Disney, Michael Ovitz, founder of Creative Artists and later president of Disney, Jack Welch, GE, about whom I also wrote a book, Ross Perot, founder of EDS, and Lou Gerstner, IBM, among others. It was, of course, impossible not to form opinions of these individuals as I studied them and learned about their accomplishments. This was good background, but it was also a potential source of bias. I attempted to counteract any such bias by studying other business leaders about whose careers I had no special knowledge. When this project began, the list of possible CEOs numbered more than 36. The final list was determined fairly late in the process, in the spring of 2002, when the initial research phase of the book was complete. Without naming names, I will confess that I wrote partial and sometimes complete chapters about other individuals who, for one reason or another, failed to make the final cut. In some cases, these also-rans fell victim to the hard times that followed the turn of the century. They didn't survive professionally, or their organizations were acquired or merged. But more often, they fell off the list because I learned that, strong reputations notwithstanding, they did not meet the criteria for inclusion. Yes, they were accomplished in their own way, but their accomplishments did not seem to speak as loudly as their reputations, or did not promise to apply across a broad spectrum of business situations. How the CEOs were selected. The seven CEOs depicted in this book represent the best of a breed of managers who were shaped, in part, by the conditions and challenges that characterized the post-1980 business environment. Several factors changed the rules of the game in the 1980s: intense foreign competition, from Europe and Japan, most notably, and a technological environment that continuously shifted the landscape, demanding that managers and corporations adapt to the new lightning-paced arena. These sweeping changes required a new type of business leader, one who would embrace change rather than deny or resist it. These leaders understood the necessity of creating enterprises that were strong enough and resilient enough to weather storms and/or downturns. For example, as the CEO of one of the lowest-priced airlines in the industry, Herb Kelleher built a company that he knew would perform well in good times and bad. Jack Welch formulated his number one, number two strategy, which called for all GE businesses to be either number one or number two in their respective markets. This was one of the strategies that defined the GE chairman's approach. He believed strongly that any business that was not one of the top two in its industry would fare poorly during market setbacks. The leaders in this book knew that business as usual was most likely a prescription for failure. For example, Sam Walton founded Walmart in 1962 because he recognized the need to compete with a new type of retailer or risk being rendered irrelevant. He saw no reason why people who lived in small towns could not get the same low prices as people who lived in much larger cities. He was not the first discounter, of course, but the story of how he built the company from a small 16,000-square-foot store in Rogers, Arkansas, with no fixtures, only tables, into the world's largest company provides important lessons for other managers and organizations. Andy Grove's bold move in 1985 is another case of a CEO striking out in a new direction as a result of a quickly shifting competitive market.